On this episode of That Kingsville Podcast, Mayor of Pelee Island, Kathy Miller, joins us talking boats and activities on Pelee. It's a lot more to do than what people think on Pelee Island. I love it.
By keeping life slow.
Slow, calm, cool, collected.
Take it easy.
Savor. Enjoy.
We'll send Kevin there after this episode.
Oh, that boat ride over there is just like an escape from reality.
It's a just
hour and a half to just
escaping the density and busyness and congestion of
Main Street.
Main Street.
Kingsville High School correspondent Andrew Van Dale joins us talking what's happening at the end of this school year, bringing us up to speed with KDHS happenings. We talk about True Kingsville's press release about all the new artwork in downtown Kingsville.
Art.
And we also talk condos. More building. Division North. It's happening.
Hey, maybe we should build them taller so they can see the art from their windows.
Yeah, why not? Why don't we just put two of them on top of each other and make a 12-story, and then we can have less, and just one's bigger.
Stop it.
Just maybe they should build them in a
block. Stop.
Like a nice, cut him nice off. Block.
Enough. Yeah.
I've seen it work somewhere else.
He's leaving. Steve doesn't leave. Join us for this episode of That Kingsville Podcast. That Kingsville Podcast is brought to you by Kingsville Brewery. Lots of changes, guys. Lots of changes.
Tried out the new menu.
Yeah, well, we're getting to that. Seasonal brews to savor. With the arrival of spring, brewmasters have been hard at work crafting delightful brews to celebrate the vibrant flavors of the season. With its citrus flavors and crisp finish, our Yuzu Saison is the perfect beer for warm weather. Head to the website, kingsvillebrewery.com, to purchase some. Follow along on social media for several different brewery announcements like Tap House 127, officially open to the public. They're thrilled to announce the Tap House 127 restaurant by Kingsville Brewery is officially open under the visionary leadership of their new director of food and beverage, Billy Alexander. They're taking their culinary experience to new heights. Join us as we combine exceptional food with renowned craft beers for an unforgettable dining experience. And the beer garden's open.
Yup.
Beer garden's open. Come over and enjoy the ultimate summer experience every Friday through Sunday. Discover expanded beverage selection featuring flagship beers, seasonal releases, and fan favorites like our pink lemonade gin smash. Follow along on social media for announcements about the beer garden's summer food menu and weekly live performances. Thank you, Kingsville Brewery, for supporting That Kingsville Podcast.
Had some venison.
Did you?
With some sweetgrass and blueberry chutney.
Oh.
My goodness.
Oh, that sounds good.
My goodness.
Yeah, we haven't had a chance because of, you know, long weekend and busy and whatnot, but oh no, we have full intent. We are
jammed it in the face.
In one bite or just several or?
I just rutted on the plate.
As you should. Thanks, Kingsville Brewery. Welcome to That Kingsville Podcast. I'm your host, Dave Hunt. Kevin Black drinking the black coffee. It's
Red Lantern special.
Yeah, but it's black. No cream. Steve Iansen. Another episode. Thanks for joining us. We're famous now. Happened. Yes.
Oh, now since last time?
Since last time, we're now
been the difference?
Totally famous. We're all.
Did I miss something?
No, you didn't miss anything.
Okay, good.
Nobody did. No. More and more folks like, hey, wait a minute. I see you on YouTube. Apparently, somebody was sharing some of the videos around again and, you know, caused another slight little wave of the recognition.
Really? What was positive this time, or they still upset?
But they were talking about the housing, which we're gonna address again in this episode because we've had new developments. But
another story.
Were we wrong about everything? People love to point out when we're wrong.
No, nothing. No, that's not really wrong.
We're always wrong.
Unbelievable.
No, you know what? You know,
good, healthy debate.
There is always two sides to every story. And in this case,
there's six sides.
Six stories. Hack!
Yeah, six sides. I keep trying.
I got it. That's fine. Gentlemen, it's windy as heck out there.
I
know. For May 2-4.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Feels like it's like in my mouth.
It is.
I don't know what I'm doing wrong today.
May 2-4
means. I'm not new to this.
May 2-4 means.
Well, let's try.
It's only 7 months till Christmas Eve.
Steve. Yes. 7 months. 7 months till the train comes back. 6 months till the train comes back. It'll all be paid by then.
Yeah. But even longer, apparently, for the fireworks, from what I'm hearing.
What?
But that's, I don't know.
Oh,
rumors.
Rumors. Yeah, nothing substantiated. No, there's...
As Fleetwood Mac would say, rumors.
No.
Speaking of legendary music, poor Tina Turner.
Oh, yeah.
That was unfortunate. A legend has passed.
No, she said we don't need another hero, so...
No.
Maybe she
I'll be honest, I never really liked her music. I respect her as an individual, but just, yeah, not a fan.
Well, it's before our time, Ike and Tina, right? That whole thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I like oldies. I just, Tina was just, she's not my bag, but I respect everything that she's done for the world of music.
Yeah, well, you know, and
what about Thunderdome?
Oh! Mad Max Thunderdome. That was what, 1986? Yeah, we're going to go with 86. I'll look it up.
Ish.
Thunderdome and that, or maybe 87. Anyway, yeah, no, there was. She was significant through, like, she blazed a whole bunch of paths and, you know, made a name and, you know, Ike beat the crap out of her relentlessly for years.
Talk about
but
that.
Yeah. Anyway, you know, lots of, and we're into May, like I was saying. So now everything's starting to happen, everything's starting to take place. Trees are all in full leaf. Everybody's out and about.
Asparagus is out.
Yep, asparagus. How is that asparagus, Kevin?
I had a little bit from Leah Maria's earlier today. It's delicious. Threw some Parmesan on top of that.
You didn't bring any in. You keep plugging this business. You never have anything.
This coffee is so good.
Any reward for us.
What are you going to do? Suck on an asparagus spring?
Take it home.
I don't know if you know this, but asparagus is delicious on vegetable platters. Like if you put a little dip, a little bit of asparagus, you know, cut the ends, cut it a little short, you know, but it's good.
I enjoy it pickled as well.
Oh, so good. There's so many. It's such a versatile vegetable.
Like it was steak.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's baked good. I had it for dinner with chicken.
Delicious. Good with chicken. Fantastic.
Actually, in the chicken with cheese is good too.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, is this Cooking with Steve?
No, I don't cook.
Anyway, everything's starting to get going again. And, you know, you're thinking about traveling and whatnot. And everybody kind of forgets about Pelee Island. But
not us.
I never forget about
Pelee.
Not us. How about we check in with Pelee Island? Let's give the mayor of Pelee a call. Does that sound good?
Let's do it.
All right.
All right.
Dial her up. Joining us on that Kingsville podcast, the mayor of Pelee Island, Kathy Miller. Thanks for taking time out of your busy night, Kathy.
Well, thanks for having me. It's nice to join you.
Well, we were just discussing that, you know, hey, spring has fully sprung. And, you know, everybody's starting to get out and about, which means, you know, hey, we can go to the island on the regular.
Yeah, the kind of unofficial start to the season is May 2-4 weekend here on Pelee Island. You know, by now, most places are up and running and ready to welcome visitors and, you know, short order, our large vessel, Pelee Islander 2, is back in service just in time, and we're getting ready to gear up for a good 2023 after a couple of really challenging years.
Well, and it's funny the way Dave led into it by saying, you know, everyone can head over. Thank God the big boat's back. So it's in service, and it's running full schedule at a Leamington now, right?
It is, yes. And as our friends in Kingsville know, it does switch over to Kingsville, I want to say, usually July 30th or the around Civic Holiday weekend.
Unless it's time for dredging the marina, which usually occurs around about that time, and then it's delayed and into September. And then by that time, nobody really comes to Kingsville for tourism to go to the island. So we'll just cross
our fingers. Well, you know what? Fortunately, we're lucky on Pelee Island to have good friends in Leamington and Kingsville that are advocating on our behalf for these vessels to be running, you know, as promised and without interruption, and certainly on their own community's behalf to ensure that, you know, you guys, each community, Leamington and Kingsville, gets the benefit of those tourists that are coming through your port and stopping at all of your great locations. You know, Kingsville has a ton of fantastic restaurants and, you know, our kind of, you know, what we have over here on Pelee Island, you know, as far as, you know, beaches and being outside and trails and everything is green and it's such a slower pace. It just goes hand in hand with our port communities of Kingsville and Leamington. And, you know, we look forward to being able to bring people into town and then kind of bring them even further south. And I'm with you, you know, you'd like to have it be consistent and be reliable.
Now, Kathy, the boat was a little bit, the big boat was a little bit late, and that does back things up a little bit on the island. Has that backlog and some of the transportation, the trucks to get across, farm equipment, implements, that sort of thing, has that started to work its way out of the system?
You know what? Sure. Like, that, you know, there's people always kind of want to know the impact of some of these delays and what happens. And certainly there's a financial impact, and there's a hard, you know, impact that you could assign to any type of service interruption in any industry. But I think what I'm more concerned about is the soft cost. So when we talk about things, you know, like, you know, small business owners having to work longer hours to bridge the gap because there's a delay in shipments of resources or staffing, or, you know, trying to get something built and you're having to, you know, wait an extra 2 or 3 weeks on something because something can't come through. And the stress of not knowing when that will be resolved. And, you know, you don't want to start your season that way because you're tired before you even start. And we have such a, you know, finite amount of time on Pelee Island to really capitalize on. So, you know, those things are starting to work out. It is, people are, you know, getting back up to speed, but certainly the delay, it makes a difference and you feel it.
Now, and correct me if I'm wrong, and I probably am.
Most of the time.
The 2 days after the Pelee Islander 2 resumed service, the Pelee Islander broke down.
Actually, it was like a day and a half before. Yes.
It knew it could take a break for the first time in like 10 years.
Yeah. Like, the island always knows, right? Like, that's just kind of the thing. you can't catch a break. Like, it knows something's going well, and, you know, something will kind of have a hiccup. But no, really, the Pelee Islander 2 was coming back into service early on that Friday. I want to say it was the 12th. And unfortunately, there's technical difficulties with the Pelee Islander, and that pulled it out of service for that, I don't know, 24-30 hour period where about 4 trips were canceled to and from the island. And that was just it's the cost of not having two vessels running at the same time. We need to have redundancy in our transportation plan. So I think you guys, being from Kingsville, people that have lived here their whole lives have heard about transportation problems to Pelee Island to and from forever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Pelee Islander is a 63-year-old vessel. And, you know, rather than pick apart some of the things that go wrong mechanically, that you know, things happen, I think we have to focus on working with Kingsville and working with Leamington and MTO and OSTC and getting the second larger vessel in play. And that's a game changer for us.
Well, we had one. We just, you know, it had its own share problem.
So right.
If your memory's not so short, which ours isn't so short, you know, the G-Mon was supposed to be the be-all and end-all, and then, you know, went through engines after engines and ran aground and broke, and, you know, consistency. And the Islander 2 was supposed to be the resolution to all those problems. And now, you know, we get more problems. So, you know, hey, we agree with you. The consistency of having a boat at all times for accessibility for the island is a necessity.
It is a necessity. And you know, I'd like to say, take the opportunity to say, the Pelee Islander 2 is a world-class vessel. It truly is. We are fortunate to have it here servicing this island. It is a comfortable way to get across the lake. It is a state-of-the-art vessel. And we are fortunate to have it. 100%. But it was intended to, yeah, you know, it was intended to be the companion vessel to the G-Mon.
Right.
So that plan has never materialized. And that's you know, 2018 is when the Pelee Islander 2 came into service for us. So, you know, COVID has disrupted a lot of things, but it's time to put our attention back on making sure that we have a two-vessel solution that was originally meant to service this island.
As a frequenter of the island on the regular, I rent a cottage on the island every year in the summer for a week, and I tow a trailer full of stuff. And when you know, G-Mon was serviceable, it was great. You could, you know, figure out how to get under those low bulkheads and whatnot. But Islander 2 with a big, wide open loading bay, it was great. You didn't have to worry about scraping on ceilings and anything like that. Now, going there, being very confident on the Islander 2, having to come home on the Islander and do that turn onto the boat with a trailer and fully loaded, that right there will pucker every orifice. So yeah, two big boats, or at least, you know, one of or one that would be conducive for cargo and not having to do a 90 degree turn to get onto the loading deck would be more than sufficient. So
is and now's no service to Ohio right now, right?
Right.
Not at the moment. I believe they released today that they're returning to service to Ohio June 2nd. I thought that was what the tweet said, but I don't have it in front of me, but I believe they've got a date for returning to Ohio service.
Now, does that not coincide with the marathon on Pelee Island?
It does. The marathon is Saturday, June 3rd. The Owenstown Transportation worked closely with Running Flat and Pelee Island Winery to add a 7 a.m. boat departure from Leamington to allow for more people to be able to come just for the day to run the race. The resources here are limited, accommodations are limited, and there's about 400 people that run the race. So we're super happy they continue to come back year after year. And the people that run this race routinely come back and run it again, and they love the experience. And it's a beautiful setting. I mean, you're running the shore of Lake Erie. And I gotta be honest, I think if you grow up around here, you kind of take that for granted a little bit. Because people that come from away are just amazed at how they're running literally 3 feet from the lake and, you know, having the breeze at their back or their face, or, you know, running in the sun and just having this great experience that they're not really getting in another half marathons. And of course, you know, the after party at Pelee Island Winery is always a draw. And, it's a really good weekend for the island. I'm happy they continue to do it.
And that's your first big event on the island of the summer. What else do you have coming up?
You know, I should rewind. It is the first big event of the summer. That is true. But we do actually have a fairly large and a well-attended spring banquet, usually the Saturday before Mother's Day, that's called Spring Song. And it's in its 22nd year. And it is, you know, a celebration of birds and birding, and it is put on by the Pelee Island Heritage Center. And Ms. Margaret Atwood attends and hosts, and we have people from the literary world come and do readings. There's book signings and books available to be bought from Margaret and other writers, and celebrity birders come and they do a bird race. So that is actually our first main event of the season, kind of kicks everything off a little bit early, but birding on Pelee Island is a unique experience also. Kind of an uninterrupted view of millions of birds that are migrating north at that time. So from there, yes, the marathon, and then into our regular summer season where most of the bars or restaurants bring in live entertainment, the winery brings in live entertainment. We do have a music and arts series called Stone and Sky, and that's hosted in an old quarry that has been brought back to life. There's a little amphitheater, limestone amphitheater within the quarry, and, you know, various different eclectic music and poetry readings and theatrical performances take place in this quarry on Sunday night. There's a farmer's market in there Saturday. And September 10th, they have something called Flutterfest, which is a theatrical music presented at Canada's southernmost point, inhabited point, Story Point Pelee. Sorry, not Story Point Pelee. But that actually takes place at Fish Point, which is, again, just a super interesting experience if you're into the monarch migration.
While we're on the topic of tourism, so to speak, it's not that long ago that Pelee Island was featured on Still Standing on CBC, and I've watched the show since the start, and, you know, you always find these little towns, and you think, oh, I'd love to visit there, that looks really neat. And I'm wondering if you can kind of give us any indication if that show really benefited Pelee Island, if you're able to talk to people who come and say, oh, I saw it on here, and this is why I'm here, kind of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. I can say without doubt, without any doubt at all, that especially during COVID, a lot of people did the Still Standing tour. So people that necessarily, you know, were choosing to stay in Ontario and were not sure which little towns or little places that they wanted to visit, or if they were choosing to go out to the Maritimes or wherever, they used Still Standing shows as their guide to pick some off the beaten path places because people were avoiding crowds. So it worked out really well for Pelee Island. You know, people still come because they watch the show and they're devotees and they want to kind of see, you know, everything that Johnny was joking about and talking about and meet all the people that he met on the show. But it was a great experience and, you know, it really truly was a love letter to our community from that production crew. And, I just think it's a great thing when you can kind of mix media like that and it actually helps local, small, somewhat forgotten economies.
Yeah. Over the couple of years of COVID, being on the island only as a Canadian and being fairly local, being in Kingsville, it was eerie just how quiet Pelee was. I've gone since I was a little kid, but those couple of years when we were over there, it was like a ghost town. You could basically just lay down and on East West Road and nobody would drive by you. It was great for, you know, solitude. But not good for like the island and tourism and whatnot. So it's great to see that, you know, things are starting to kick off again this year with everything being back open. Is there anything new or significant happening on Pelee that may attract a few people to come by?
Well, you know, one of the greatest things about Pelee Island is that it really doesn't change that much ever.
That's why we love it.
That's right. And what people come here for is the pace, and it is slower and it is more relaxed. And in that regard, nothing has changed. There are a couple new businesses that are opening up and a couple businesses expanding their offerings. Again, people probably a little bit hesitant to invest through COVID and now are ready to get out and do those things and hire more staff back. You know, staff was a big issue during COVID. So this year it seems like there's a full staff at everyone's establishments here, which is great for us. But what I would say is that, you know, maybe what's new is there's an appreciation for slowing down and unplugging and getting out of the rat race a little bit. And people have a new appreciation for that. I think before COVID, there was the mindset was kind of like, what do you do there? You know, there's nothing to do. Like, what am I going to do there? And really, there is nothing to do. And that's the point.
Exactly.
You have nowhere to be. It doesn't matter who you think you are. Everyone is the same here. And that hasn't changed.
If you ask that question, you're not the right person for Pelee.
Right. Yeah.
Well, you know what? 100%. You know, I run into this all the time when I talk to people about doing business on Pelee Island even, or, you know, is it reasonable? And I, the biggest mistake I think people can make in business in general is thinking that everyone is your customer. But certainly on Pelee, it just isn't true. Like there's a certain type of person that appreciates this island. And unfortunately, it just isn't for everyone. And that's okay. That's okay because who it is for, they fall in love with it. And that's who we want to come and experience it and appreciate it for what its actual strength is, which is time and space to reconnect.
So the last couple of winters weren't too kind to the island, with a lot of erosion damage on West Road and, you know, East Beach being pretty eroded or high water levels having an effect. What's been done over the last, you know, year basically to help mitigate any more damage or erosion, or are water levels back down?
Yeah, thankfully water levels have receded a little bit, and that's helping us out a lot. But what I can tell you, and you know, I don't know how municipal nerdy you guys want to get on this.
All the way.
But I can get a little bit municipal nerdy. you know, the tax base here is about $1.8 million. So we are challenged not just with finding the money to mitigate disaster and disaster associated with climate change or weather change. We are challenged also to be able to actually write grants to do that, because the cost share of grants is too high for us. So municipalities can only borrow a certain amount legally within the Municipal Act. You can't just borrow endless amounts of money and bankrupt your township. There's a ceiling to that legally. So we aren't able to actually even borrow or locate enough money to meet our portion of a 50-50 or a 60-40 cost share that might exist in a federal grant like Disaster Mitigation Adaptation Fund. So we are left to kind of improvise. We are still writing grants and making grant applications and working on the best ways to make grant applications and seeking input from experts on these matters. But I think I need to say this for the municipal nerds out there. The Township of Healy over 4 years has spent $700,000 in shoreline protection. Mm-hmm. And that's huge for us. That's no small feat. We get no credit for that with the government when we're writing grants as an investment. There's no recognition of how challenging small municipalities like ours, how challenging this is for our municipality. In my view, disaster mitigation and climate associated with climate change or weather change is a federal and a global issue. It is not a municipal issue. So it's very challenging for us to try to meet that overpowering, you know, it's just a big monster that, it doesn't change. We will always have to deal with shoreline erosion, and it's better to be able to put a little bit every year on it in maintenance until we can get the proper funding to do the work that we need to do. There's a lot of criticism out there in the township for the state of our roads, for example. It's endless. And I mean, that's in every community. Everyone complains about the roads are not pristine or whatever it is. But we are too busy keeping the island dry. So there's a huge investment made in pump houses. The whole island is pumped dry through a canal system and very expensive pump houses and through shoreline protection and drainage work. That frankly, that has to be our priority. So it's a balancing act. But you know what? We're not taking our eye off the ball, and we continually keep in touch with MPPs and MPs. And like I said, we rely on the expertise of a few different people to help us make the strongest grant applications that we can. We cross our fingers and hope it's our turn.
Kathy, I know a few years ago, there was a push by the township to try and get considered under the same umbrella that communities in the far north are because of that discrepancy in the ability to fund some of those cost share grants. Did anything ever come of that?
You know what? It's a challenging, ask, I guess. There is no proper status that would be respected across every ministry, federal and provincial. So, when you consider remote status, how many degrees north you are is actually a factor, which it doesn't help us at all in this
Let's go the other
formula.
Degrees south are you?
Right. And so there's no, we miss the mark on the formula, Jeff. So every grant that we apply for, essentially, we ask for special dispensation. And I think that even if we achieve some sort of formulaic status in that regard, it would only be with one ministry at a time. So it's very hard that there is no uniform blanket that can be applied to our problem. It simply is a case by case basis. And every single time that we go ask any ministry for any support, we have to make the case for special dispensation of an alleviated cost share. And sometimes we are successful with that, frankly. Broadband and, the Universal Broadband Fund and ICON Fund at the province level, there's special considerations for Pelee Island in that funding model, and we're fortunate enough to benefit from it. So it does happen, but you need to be persistent and you need to be creative.
Well, Kathy, I'm excited to get back to the island. I love that place. It is the gem of Lake Erie, right? For all the people that are naysayers and there's nothing to do, you're not going and you're not looking at the right things. So wanted to say thanks for taking your time out of the evening to share all the news of Pelee Island. Can't wait to get back over there and experience it. And thank you again for joining us on that Kingsville podcast, Kathy.
Thank you for having me. Please stop in and say hi when you're visiting, and thank you for loving Pelee Island.
Will do. Take care.
Thank you.
Cool. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That Kingsville podcast also brought to you by Murray Insurance. Steve?
Yes?
You frustrated with your current level of service you get from your insurance company? Maybe. Maybe not.
Maybe. Maybe not.
You concerned some of your most important assets aren't covered the way they should be, whether it's your car, your house, your income, or your business? Ask the professionals at Murray Insurance for a full review. Get the peace of mind you need with your insurance. Call Murray Insurance today, 519-733-2331, or email service at murrayinsurance.ca today for great service, friendly local staff, guaranteed same-day callback, and claims concierge service. Here comes Steve, 519-733-2331.
I would definitely call.
519-733-2331.
I know it now.
519-733-2331. Thank you, Murray Insurance.
Now you do.
For supporting That Kingsville Podcast. Joining us on That Kingsville Podcast, KDHS correspondent Andrew Van Dale. Thanks, Andrew, for joining us again on the show.
Of course. Pleasure to be here.
Andrew, you got a month left of school. What's happening at KDHS right now?
So we've kind of slowed down a little bit from the last time I was out on the podcast, but one of the big things that we did just finish actually today was we had our Relay for Life in collaboration with Leamington High School for raising money for cancer research, and together collectively with both schools, we raised over $20,000, which was awesome.
Congratulations.
That's amazing.
It was a big day of just running around the track like Relay for Life events do, and then Leamington High School leadership class, they put on a bunch of like little mini games to kind of keep everyone occupied, having fun. And then we all got different donations, whether it be from Domino's, Tim Hortons, and all that stuff, to kind of just have a really fun day for the kids and also like make do of a good cause. What else? Oh, yeah. So I do know that on Friday, we're actually, it's not anything too crazy, too special, but we're having a Cavalward assembly and just kind of like a whole assembly for the school. It's one of the last ones we're going to have in the 2022-2023 school year. But we have like Cavalward set up, which basically all the students will vote on who they think should will either be the future Elon Musk or will be late to their graduation. And I'm pretty sure I actually am winning. I think I am.
I won one of those awards 20 years ago.
25 years. Was yeah, it that one?
Yeah, no, I was most likely to have a game show, be a game show host. I know they're pretty lame back in the 90s. It's crazy. I don't know. Go on, Andrew. I'm segueing.
But I think I got last year most likely to sleep through an earthquake because I accidentally fell asleep on my spare and then was late to my bio class once or twice. But that's besides the point. And then we did also last Friday just host our, we'll be hosting the car show, which was just an awesome event to see all the cars, see raising money, and going to the food bank, which is like a really good thing that, especially because of our tech program that we have, being able to kind of have the kids involved and seeing the entire community come and park all their cars, even though it ended a little bit unfortunately, with like an incident at the end, but regardless, it was still a really good time seeing all the cars. It's always an awesome event.
Yeah, nobody's hurt. Everything's okay. Yep, moving.
Exactly. Yeah.
Moving along.
Yeah.
The the principal's list luncheon I know was yesterday, where the those students with 90% average or greater were acknowledged. I guess from your point of view, Andrew, you're just about wrapping up here. You're ready to head off to that next stage in your life. For those kids who probably will. Don't listen, but those parents of kids who may listen that are coming into high school and those students too that have maybe just had a year or two, what would you tell Andrew for like the Andrew today, what would he tell Andrew 4 years ago as he was coming into high school?
Something that I think I actually, it's funny because I kind of had a question like this asked on, because we have a Kingsville podcast like that we run kind of through our school and we do that every month, and I had an interview with a grade 9 student kind of asking me all these questions about like, are you excited for grade 12 and graduating? And then they did ask me, what would you kind of tell your grade 9 self or like other grade 9? And the biggest thing that I stand by is getting involved. I know that sure, my grade 9 year, it was cut relatively short. I had one semester, then a month, or a month or two than COVID. But I knew that even if COVID wasn't a thing, I wouldn't have been able to take that leap and A, try out for teams, or like, sure, I was on student council, but getting involved really completely changes and elevates your high school experience. And I think that if I hadn't of just kind of like flipped a switch after COVID kind of ended, and decided to try out for, like, last year I played boys baseball, and now we just finished our senior boys soccer season that ended roughly. But
thanks.
Yeah,
is it because of the coach?
Definitely not.
I'm gonna blame the coach.
Thank you, Andrew.
I'd blame the coach.
It was a rough turn of events, but getting involved is 100% the thing that I want to be able to tell my grade nines to do. Like, all the grade nines that are in our school now, like, and still going into grade 10 or grade 8, going into grade 9, whether it be going on like school teams, trying out for school teams, it doesn't matter if you get cut, just try out and then you always have next year. Or same thing with student council or any sort of club. And always take the initiative. Don't just think that, like, oh yeah, these people don't think it's cool. Like, these big cool kids don't think that trying out for things is cool and getting cut and then you'll be made fun of, or saying things like student council, like, oh, that's for nerds, that's lame. It's not. Like, the things that you get to do, the opportunities that you get to have with getting involved, it's 100% the thing that elevates your high school experience. And I wish I knew that in my grade 9 and 10 year. And sure, again, it's a little bit different because COVID was a thing and a lot of things that I had to do were limited. But let's say, hypothetically, talking with grade 8 going into grade 9, the thing that I would tell them would just be to get involved, have fun. Don't care about what anybody thinks. The first 4 years of your, like, the first year of your high school career, or I guess career, if that's how you want to put it, is probably one of the most important, because that's where you really meet everyone, like, going to camp stuff, like, how I vouch for that. Do that trip. Don't think it's lame. Go do that trip. And I guess this is, yeah, for parents listening, because kids probably don't, because,
you know, hey,
whatever.
Whoa.
Not in that
judge
way.
Judge our audience.
Not in that way. But,
That Tazel old man podcast
is
what we're called at the high school. Hey, Andrew, was that interview by Alessia Persibali?
It was, I may,
she's a, no, it wasn't this time. She was the, she's
I don't
a tough
think
interviewer.
It was that.
You're lucky.
It's Kevin's niece.
Yes.
Talking about COVID, looking back, do you think that your age group kind of missed out? Do you think that there was
heavy now?
Mm-hmm. Well, just, hey, like, no, you're at the That's, end.
Exactly. No, Andrew's moving on.
Yeah.
Like, get it.
No, it's fair. I'm just,
you know, anyway. I don't remember a whole lot of my high school time, but I feel like it was good. And I'm just wondering, Andrew, when you look back, are you going to, you know, do you think that you're going to feel like you missed out, or do you think that it was just different, I guess?
Well, I'd say, I know the first thing that I'm going to take from COVID is I now have an excuse and something to tell my kids that I went through. That was something dramatic and horrible, because if for some reason, I feel like some parents always have some weird story to tell their kids about how difficult their life was. But,
me too. Me too.
Yeah.
It comes down to it.
We were fine it over years.
Yeah, they had to climb mountains to get to school or whatever. But,
you have the internet. We have to through books.
To use a landline and bike to our friend's house to see if they could play
fire chords.
Okay, let's. Oh, sorry, Andrew.
No, it's all good. But I'd say that COVID honestly was a big help. Sure, it was a major inconvenience for the entire world and just for like students and kids trying to find their way, whether it be starting like high school, starting university, and all that stuff. It was definitely an inhibitor. But I know that I had some of the best times of my high school life during that whole pandemic era, especially not being in school, not due to the fact that I'm not in school and, you know, just kind of like blowing it off, but due to the fact that I was able to truly build really good friendships that I've kept throughout my entire like high school time. But I also think that it really kind of allowed us to breathe a breath of fresh air, kind of literally and figuratively. Because we had a lot of our life taken away from us. And with it being reinstated back when I was starting out grade 11, it really kind of makes you realize all the things that we took for granted, like just going out to eat, going to a movie, or just being able to have fun school events, like, we realized how much more we actually wanted that and how much more we took it for granted. And like in grade nine and stuff, well, first semester of grade nine. But I'd say that it definitely is a thing that I won't look back on, and it will be a negative for me in high school. I think it definitely added to my high school experience, which kind of sounds a bit like, I mean, you can take it how you will. And I guess making the best of a bad situation, and that's what I think everybody did. Like, I know I had COVID probably 3 or 4 times. Sure, for me it was a stuffy nose, and for others it was people, like, they had to be put on ventilators. But at the end of the day, you really are appreciative for what you have. And I would say that the entire COVID timeline during my high school experience kind of elevated it a little bit, because I gained perspective.
So did you guys really blow it out of prom for it?
Like, pardon?
Did you really blow it out of prom? Like, just...
Oh, I say so.
You have to go crazy, yeah, right? You got to make up for it.
Time's up.
I would say we did.
Good.
Good. Nice. Glad to hear.
Good job.
Glad to hear. Well, Andrew, thanks for taking the time. I know we only had you on for a couple of segments, but very informative, bringing everybody up to speed. Hopefully, maybe you can pass along a line of maybe who your successor will be next year.
I'm planning on it. We, at that one assembly that we have on Friday, we're announcing our new student council, and my position, like my minister of assembly's position, is actually being like passed down onto one of my good friends, I think. Hopefully.
Well,
so maybe he'll be able to take my place here.
If he's if he's half as good as you, we'll be more than happy. So again, Andrew, thanks again for taking the time and for all your help through communicating what's going on inside the walls of KDHS. Enjoy your summer. Cool. Good luck in the fall.
Thank you guys so much. All right. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Guys, I got a press release I got to read.
Press release.
True Kingsville unveils vibrant art installation project enhancing downtown Kingsville. Did you guys see all this stuff uptown?
Saw some art.
I haven't, but Kellen, we were out walking the dog tonight, and he mentioned that he'd seen a couple of them. And
good.
Like, they're beautiful, he says.
Allow me to elaborate.
Please do. You asked, I answered.
Yeah, May 23rd, 2023, True Kingsville, a not-for-profit organization dedicated to promoting Kingsville tourism and the cultural enrichment of the community, is excited to announce the launch of their inaugural project, the Downtown Art Installation. True Kingsville secured the funding through the Ontario Southwest Tourism Relief Fund in conjunction with FedDev, Federal Economic Development Agency, engaged local artists to create art installations for our downtown core. True Kingsville partnered with the Art Society of Kingsville and commissioned 12 local artists to portray the pillars of our community to be installed in the facade of buildings downtown. The project's carefully curated a diverse collection of art installations that encapsulate the essence of Kingsville and its residents. These installations, created both by renowned emerging artists, will be prominently displayed on the facades of buildings in strategic locations, adding color, texture, creativity to the urban canvas. From vibrant murals depicting the region's breathtaking landscapes to thought-provoking scenes reflecting the town's rich history, each piece tells a unique story and celebrates the spirit of Kingsville. Initiative is a positive story, a collaborative effort between True Kingsville, ASK, local businesses, property owners, and talented artists all coming together for the greater good. Through these partnerships, True Kingsville has fostered a strong sense of community, civic pride, transforming downtown into an engaging and dynamic public art gallery. As a part of the project, ASK created an accompanying art walk brochure that invites residents and visitors alike to set out on an artistic adventure through town. The brochure guides you along the route while providing a narrative of each of the artist's biography, story behind the art, as well as details on some of the wonderful historical landmarks in town. True Kingsville is committed to ongoing support of the arts and culture in town with the Art Society of Kingsville. Our goal is to continue the work that will add to the art throughout the community to ensure the legacy of art in town. True Kingsville has set up aside $10,000 for sponsorship to work alongside the town of Kingsville and for the first annual Kingsville Art Festival to be held the weekend of July 15th and 16th. The festival will celebrate everything about arts and culture, music, fashion, artistry, and community. For details on the amazing event, artsocietyofkingsville.ca. True Kingsville is immensely grateful for the generous support received from community stakeholders and volunteers throughout this project. We'd like to recognize and thank several key players who, without their contributions and time and heart, this project would not have come to fruition. Thank you to Anne Ducharme, Dave Creed, Emma Rally, and the team at Ontario Southwest Tourism, FedDev Ontario, and the board members of True Kingsville. So you saw our hard work, did you?
No. Kellen did.
Oh.
I haven't seen it yet either, but I saw the pictures on Facebook, and it looks fantastic.
Yeah, the first few were up. So we couldn't really talk about it a whole lot because of some statutes with the grant. But there are several different board members, business owners, local stakeholders, community individuals. We formed True Kingsville. I was an addition midway through to facilitate tourism initiatives in Kingsville. And this was a grant application that was kind of midstream when I joined on to be able to provide something of substance for Kingsville. And the idea was, we all have things about Kingsville that we like. There's things that we know and take for granted visually that we see. And if we could turn that into some sort of artistic expression and display it throughout town, that it would be something of value culturally and aesthetically. So a lot of the local business owners have agreed to share their facades for duration of time. And this was our first kick at the can. So,
does this mean Committee Dave is back?
No.
On top of all the great not-for-profit
organizational Dave.
Okay. We'll take him.
So, yeah, a lot of people have started seeing it. That was the first five or six. A lot more to come.
Right. Where can people get the brochure?
It will be distributed, I think, at the Carnegie as well as on at the Carnegie because of Art Society of Kingsville. That's where they're at, and then the couple of days of their art.
Should do it as a mail out.
I should do QR codes.
No.
Yeah, the internet
put it out through the mail.
No, the internet has basically made the mail obsolete anyway. So. You could just like QR code right beside, and then you could immediately find that information virtually.
There will be plaques though on each
with a QR code to explain
what or letters with words that make sentences. So you just read
words.
Yeah. No, there's some other pieces that are going to be displayed a little bit higher that require some machinery. And as time allows, over the next few weeks they'll be installed. So. If anyone's seen the Canada Geese wings in the alleyway on Main West, great photo opportunity. A lot of tourists from out of town, you take a snap picture and hashtag it, and they're like, oh, I'm from Kingsville, I'm a big goose. There's one on the side of the library as well, side of Joe so far.
Those are the ones he saw. That's what he mentioned.
Yeah, it's a blanket, a barn blanket. Interpretation, so like a beaded bird blanket, but a really, really great opportunity to engage the local art community, and these were their creations. So it was a general framework, is like, hey, this is what we want to do, what do you got? And like I said, with Ann and Dave's assistance, they facilitated it through their operation, and it's been great. So
love it.
On to some worse news.
Oh,
the show's over. Well,
why, we got something else?
Do you want to talk?
We don't want to talk about giant buildings getting put up in town, do we?
Oh, do you have any stories? I'll say it every time. Yeah. I don't care. I'll just keep reusing it.
Yeah. So the town and council passed or allowed a building on Division Street North. I believe it's in the 1600s. Around Palmer Drive.
Yep.
On the east side.
Yep. East side. Northeast side. Or Division North East side. For a 100-unit, I think it's 12-meter-ish building, 12-meter-tall building, to be erected on that open vacant lot. So
wonderful.
Well,
it's a great spot to put a whole bunch of residents. That can't. Oh, should we? No.
What?
Why not push all that development out to the outskirts of town?
There you go.
Because nothing makes more sense than having high density developments going to the very outskirts of the former municipal boundaries.
Or where it's, and then you can look at it on the contrary. It's like, okay, fine. It's not on Main, so the traffic won't be a problem. But we're talking 100 units here now.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm not wrong, what are the ones at the end of Woody Crest? Or 200 Main? Is that only...
I don't know.
Is that only 100?
I don't know.
120 Main?
Whatever.
Six-story ones.
I don't know. I guess I'm a little bit numb. I'm just... Because the door's open. We don't know when it's going to stop. We talked about this, obviously, last episode. Mm-hmm. You know, I get it. The province has its mandate and the province dictates what can be done. So I'm disappointed in the province. I'm disappointed in the county. I'm disappointed in council. I'm just, I guess, because it's occurring and it's starting to occur everywhere. And like we said, like at what point, like it's a lot in a short period of time. And again, and my dad said, where are people coming from? Like,
well, the buildings are half full. Like they're building buildings that are empty. Mm-hmm. You know, that's like the condos at the park never filled. The condo building that's next to the high school is not full.
Well, I think
they're putting up 2 6-story buildings in the back that won't be full. They're going to build another 6-story over here that's not going to be full.
Mm-hmm. So I guess though, to look at it from the other angle is, as a developer, what are they thinking? And they've got to know that. They've got to be aware that there's vacancies yet. Yeah. So they look at it and say, okay, well, I've seen what this is, or I know what this is. I can do it better. And I can empty that building.
On the footprint where they're at, if you twin the, let's call them semis, that are on the symmetrical side of that lot, right? I can't remember the street off of the
side. Holly and...
is it Holly?
Cranberry.
Yeah, right, so Holly and Cranberry. So how many houses would you say are in there? 20?
Sure.
24 maybe.
Sure. And I'm sure that they knew when they built and they moved there that they were going to be staring at a 6-story building.
No, but... for a developer, and their point is you can sell 24 or you can sell 100.
Yeah.
But can you?
Well, they don't care. Heck, 50 could stay vacant. You still sold 50 instead of 24. Right. It's actually it's commercial.
So then,
it's
that's the argument. Then why not just make it a 3-story? I shouldn't get riled up because I don't have all the answers.
No.
I just think if the plan, sorry, Kev. But if the planner and the planning department is going by the code and they're going by the provincial mandate and guidelines, their hands are tied. There's nothing they can do. And then they have to direct council, and council has to follow along and say, yes, you know what? We can't say no, even though, you know, we know they've tried before.
Is that
failed.
The case? Because here's the thing. They proposed a 10-story apartment building on the corner of Jasperson and Main 6 years ago. And they denied that application because they found at that point, they were able to still just deny without having to have these kind of backups because the laws weren't set up the same way at the tribunal, where the province would be leaning a lot heavier against municipalities and for developers. But then they never bring in any restrictions to set up how to get away from having this happen again. And then they have the medical building built, and they never pass any restrictions against it. And then they have the condo building built, and they never pass any restrictions against it. And then the Valenti buildings get approved, and they never pass any restrictions against it. And now they're standing up and saying, well, there's nothing we can do because we don't have anything in place to prevent it. Well, it started 6 years ago. Like, if they had have started dealing with this issue then maybe you have official plan amendments and zoning bylaw restrictions in place to prevent this. Now, council doesn't even get site plans anymore because they've given that up to administration. So now once zoning is passed and administration's able to rubber stamp a site plan, and council never sees it again, because that's an easy way for council to not have to comment on it. They don't want this to keep coming back to them because they don't want to have to keep making comments and having a room full of people staring at them angry. This could have been dealt with. I'm not saying they would have won, and I'm not saying that the province wouldn't have, that anything would have changed.
We don't know.
But we don't know. And again, not saying that there's anything that that council at this point could have done differently, but they've never tried. They've never tried to pass any restrictions that would put any limits on this.
But they've only tried it after the fact.
After.
As a retroactive.
Like It's like saying, it makes me so mad.
I can tell.
And that's okay.
You're red.
No,
it's like, but we're hey. we're pushing high density development to the edges of our town. What are you talking about? If you're going to allow it, it's out by the fire department.
Yeah, Dairy Queen.
Dairy Queen.
Tim Hortons.
Like, what?
Daycare.
Gas.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then again, who knows? All of these units, they may fill up, and then that'll bring people in. And next thing you know, our downtown, no vacancies. Can't find anything.
Somehow
the magic will come, and the traffic problem will just be fixed. Maybe this is all part of the plan. Maybe we're sitting here and we're having this argument and this debate, and yet somebody knows something, and it's all just going to fall perfectly into place.
Nobody knows anything. Nobody knows anything, Steve.
I used to live north of Toronto.
Yeah.
You want to see it?
Yeah. Well, that's why I said it.
Go to Stouffville. It used to be a beautiful little town. Yeah, nice little farm market. You could go buy rabbits and chickens. I actually bought 10 rabbits at the Stouffville flea market to take home. Oh, I was going to start a little rabbit farm. That was my plan. They all died. But just like the town of Stouffville and its identity, as it's surrounded by GTA monoliths and sprawl.
Well, let's not go so far. The GTA is not coming next door to us anytime soon. However,
we're
going to go that way.
No. We're starting the footprints of sprawl.
Correct. Again, that's why last episode I made the comment about let's take a look at cases and what's done and what's happened. Stouffville's a great example. Leamington, next door, great example. What happens when development isn't regulated?
Again, not saying that there was a whole lot that the council could do
this
specific decision and the way that the restrictions and regulations and bylaws are drawn up at the moment. But they also aren't trying to do anything that would change it.
Well, everything seems to be getting kicked down the road to September, right?
When the province is going to release their new provincial policy statements, and then that'll take away even more of their decision-making powers.
So what you're saying is maybe we should accelerate and circumvent or put things in place prior to that?
Well, if you can, then at least you have something legally that says, hey, we had this in place before you made this change. Not saying it would make any difference, because you don't know how provincial policies and laws are going to be drawn up. It may just take all that decision-making power away. You don't have a choice. But am I the only one that feels like we're not even trying?
No, I think there's a large community, a verbal, very vocal, large community that feels very similar sentiment.
Who knows? I mean, maybe we can use it to our advantage. Come for the beautiful lake views, beautiful artwork, and the incredible six-story buildings adorning our community.
God, I love you, Steve.
Man, imagine the size of mural you could put on the side of one of those condo buildings.
Yeah, I've seen it. Downtown Detroit, it's whales. Everybody see that? You know, looking from Comerica, Barry Sanders used to be up there back in the 90s.
Used to be Sanders, and then it was Iserman.
And then there's whales, right? Like, it's beautiful, but it was a giant white facade, you know, looking out at Comerica Park. Maybe we can get Banksy to come in.
Yeah. Yeah. God's number.
Kicking stuff. Anyway, I'm sure this is not the end of these things. And I think I can speak for the three of us and echo your comments and your points of, rather than being reactionary, why aren't we trying to do something now? Why aren't we having those special meetings of council to say, listen, we got to stop this immediately. We had that stay of execution for development, or that momentary pause, right, where the Corps in South Spruce and Maine had a cease and desist for any expansion. Why can't we do that for any...
Here's something else I'd like to know. One of the main things during the municipal election campaign was development. It was, if anything, it was probably the number one issue for voters in the town of Kingsville. And council has decided that they want to make less decisions about development.
Right.
And advocate more of that responsibility to administration. Yeah. Not saying administration isn't fully qualified to be able to make those recommendations, but
they're not representative of the people. They're a hired position.
And it doesn't allow the town to see those decisions being made and understand like have,
impact.
Yeah. It, if you want to make people quiet and stop complaining, more transparency, not less.
Agreed. Yeah, action. Actions, right, rather than excuses.
Yeah. Condos. Actually, I'm not even against it. I'm not against more development in the town. It's just doing it right and not just piecemeal all right. over the town, whatever well, size a building wants to be built.
Right. And we haven't even addressed future economic growth. We don't have any commercial space that's shovel ready in order for expansion to handle the commercial end of things. And you know what happens when that happens? Hey, guys, Walmart wants to take that giant plot of land over there on Seacliff, you know, Colmac orchard kind of size. Yeah, let's just stick a Canadian Tire in there because, you know, we don't have enough stores. I don't know why I did it in that accent, but that was okay. It was in my head.
It's good. It's a Walmart accent.
It is a Walmart. It's a Walmart accent. I know I don't want to do that one because, like, anyway. But that's what happens, right? You don't yeah. foster a commercial epicenter or center in your town. Your town dies because then, you know, oh, shoot, we got this giant building out of the outskirts and we got to facilitate the, you know, 400 people that live there.
Dish. Yep.
Anyway.
How many people live in Ruthven?
410. Just stack them all up in one. I have no idea.
I wonder what that number is. I wonder what the number of people is that live in Ruthven in comparison to like two condo buildings in the town.
Oh, I would say Ruthven's probably 2,200 people.
You would think that many?
Well, it's pretty big, right?
Oh, yeah, you go out to the second floor. It uses the borders. I mean, you've got the little subdivision around region and stuff on.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I take it back. It's all right. Fine. But you're right.
You've got all the new development mm-hmm. off like whatever those streets are.
How many people do you think live in Northridge?
87.
Yeah, four.
Okay. But that's exactly it. It's a matter of we got to do something. So can't just sit here and talk about it. And well, we can get more subscribers that way. Anyway,
yeah.
Speaking of that, please like, subscribe. We might break 200. If we do, we'll have a party. It's
how many
crazy.
People live in New California?
17.
Thanks. There's five in the Rogers house alone.
Thanks, Gary Glass for production. Please again, like, subscribe. It helps us. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you again soon.